Il 2 febbraio 2008 il Palazzo delle Papesse ha inaugurato Punto Za, giovane arte dal Sudafrica. Una mostra a cura di Marlene Dumas, Lorenzo Fusi, Kendall Gears, Bernie Serla, Minette Vari e Sue Williamson. Quella sera Johan Thom ha fatto una sua nuova performance di ben 4 ore dal titolo Come in Peace, Go to Pieces. Vieni in pace, torni a pezzi. L'artista in ginocchio al centro della scena, un assistente a destra e uno a sinistra, un bidone pieno di olio e un altro carico di vetri. Partendo da questo progetto, Johan Thom ci racconta dove vanno il corpo e la mente durante una performance e di come questa possa trasformarci. La musica che lega l'intervista è dei Pamela's Parade, dei Playstove e dei Rosa Luxemburg Quintet, scaricabili sotto Creative Commons dalla net label Insubordinations. L'intervista è in inglese. Buon ascolto.
My name is Johan Thom. I'm a performance and video artist based in Johannesburg. I work from the Fordsburg Artist Studios, which is more commonly known as the Bag Factory Artist Studios. I studied in Pretoria, both graduate and postgraduate degrees. And later on, approximately 2 years ago, I moved to Johannesburg. I grew up in Boksburg, which was a notorious right-wing white area in South Africa during apartheid. Grew up there, moved to Pretoria, moved back to Johannesburg. The piece was called Come in Peace, Go to Pieces. And I will basically only describe the physical characteristics of the work, what the work means or those kind of things. That's an open discussion and it depends on how we frame that discussion. The work was a single action that required three people to complete. It's about moving physical materials with the use of the body. Starting from my left side, which would have been for the audience their right side, there was the first performer who was standing next to a barrel of oil. Then in the middle, there's the second performer who was prostrate on the floor as somebody who would perhaps pray or bow to a leader, a fairly open gesture of submission, or somebody who's ready to be punished, and then a third performer who was standing next to a large pile of glass. The action consisted of the following. The first performer with oil would take a ladle full of oil, a bucket full of oil, call it, small little silver bucket of oil, and put that on the back of the performer in the middle, who was also placed on some kind of round base like an altar piece. And then the third person who was standing next to the pile of glass would take a shovel and pick up a single load of glass, placing it on the back of the central performer. At that point, the central performer would raise up with their arms extended into the air, a gesture reminiscent of somebody in ecstasy, somebody surrendering as in hands up, or perhaps a little bit more frivolous, somebody doing a Mexican wave at a sports festival. In the face of the action itself, everything becomes interpretation. And what I mean by that is that, number one, I personally feel that everybody should reserve the right to make their own interpretation. The moment that I attach an authoritative reading to the work, I fundamentally take away from the capacity of art to speak as freely as possible. So I believe that it's really important that the work remains open in terms of its interpretation. And more to the point, I understand that even if I were to look at the work, I would only be making an interpretation of it. The action exists in itself. I interpret it, you interpret it. Yes, there are elements in it that we could connect together to generate meaning for ourselves, and that is good. All those things are contextually variable and also have to do with the emotional, psychological state, our histories, etc. The way that we connect them has to do with those kind of histories, etc. I don't know exactly what the piece means. I know what I experience when I make the piece. It's interesting. Well, from a very personal perspective, it's performances like these are about energy. That's all. The political aspects, I like the fact that they exist, and I like the fact, or should one call it the meaning aspect of the work? I like the fact that that exists and that it is as open as possible because it gives it real potency. In other words, the freer the interpretations are, the more potent a work is. I cannot take responsibility for all the interpretations, and yet I must be willing to take responsibility should the work in any way really end up challenging social, religious, or political values. That for me is the strength, the power, and the beauty of art. Either interpretation is free or it is not. There's no middle road. What I think about the experience of the work is something else. Having gone through this action over the course of more or less 4 hours, I know that for the first hour, I am consciously aware of what goes on, everything around me, and slowly but surely that first layer of consciousness disappears. And all that remains is a fairly open stream, a subconscious stream, but also a linkage with pure experience. So whereas my mind is no longer processing information consciously, it's just simply open, my body becomes completely linked to its experience of the here and the now. The best way I can explain it is to say it is like an animal who has no concept of ego, only of experience. In that same sense, it's very much that kind of experience for me, and I know, having spoken to the other performers, the two people who helped me, for them it was also that. At some point, it just becomes a mechanical action, and you, in a real sense, disappear from the world of consciousness, which for me is quite an amazing experience. I suppose it must be what death is like, or what it's like when you are just born. Before you develop a sense of consciousness or ego, around about 18 to 22 months into your life. I'm fairly open. Some works must be live performances and others can be documented on video. It depends on what you want out of the work. This kind of work that I did, yeah, I don't like doing because it is, for me, I'm not sure why I should do these kinds of works within a fine arts context. I think it would be better if you go and do them just in public somewhere. I think that's the best case scenario. Because it takes so much of you. I do have my doubts about whether art is the appropriate place for this to happen. Neither is the field of psychiatry or religious studies or spiritual studies or any of that. I think we need to radically rethink the whole concept of art. Inasmuch as it concerns my own interaction with the art world, I think, therefore, it's easier for me to present video work or those kind of things. It's just better for me. It's more comfortable. It's an easier format to work in. Conventions are clearer. You're thinking very much inside the box when you present work that way, which is good because at this particular stage, all institutions enshrine particular methodologies, systems of power, of human understanding, of subjectivity. And these institutions can never be liberating. Never. What I like about being in South Africa right now is it's so clear exactly how the system of art operates to enshrine and generate meaning and to institutionalize relationships of power and ideology and so on. It's so easy to see it. You don't have to be a professor of astronomy to understand how these systems operate. And it's quite nice because it makes it really easy to laugh at it, to find it humorous, and to understand how facile and without any real meaning or purpose it all is. It's chaotic, and yet it does try to keep things within the broader range of, call it meaning, that we are supposed to adhere to in South Africa right now. So that for me is interesting. I think it's funny. It's not pessimistic or anything. I wish more people would just look at it and laugh at it and poke fun at it a little bit without being part of the in club and saying, I'm doing well as an artist, so now it's okay for me to kind of make fun about the gallerists and so on, or make fun about the museums or the state of art in South Africa. It's not like that. I think it's healthy for everybody to doubt the system from point A, whether you're a student or even somebody who's still at school, to just understand how facile government is, how facile relationships or institutions are, and how utterly worthless they are. My personal feeling at this stage is that the one thing that we do not have is a real understanding of anarchy in the classic sense, where we believe in the power of individuals to make decisions for themselves, where the first response to anybody who posits a theory or philosophy of anarchic thinking, the first response of anybody who wishes to, or who is confronted with a theory or philosophy of individuality, individual thinking, and the right of individuals to decide things for themselves, is not how will we punish them if they do not conform to these structures. I think one has to understand that fundamentally all these institutions, beginning with the largest institution that exists in the state today, namely the state, and its partner, the law, that those things are fundamentally illegal units governing our lives. Well, I mean, think of it this way. The whole concept of the state is set up as being In some odd contractual agreement with individuals to become citizens, and yet I've never seen any contract with my name on it and that of the so-called president of our state. How do we begin to do that? We insist on the right to think for ourselves, to interpret for ourselves. We insist on the right to live for ourselves, and we stop thinking that somebody out there is going to help us. The only thing that I know is that traditional right-wing and left-wing philosophy or thinking has failed us in our country. The failure is fresh and sweet. It's there for all to see. For those people who think the great success story of South Africa is the new South Africa, they are mistaken. The great success story there was probably the fact that we had a fairly bloodless revolution. The failure of that revolution we live today. And people are aware of it. Slowly but surely. I mean, put it this way. The biggest riots in the history of South Africa happened, what was it, a year ago. So, I think one has to take that into consideration. At present, our government, the failure of our government to actually deliver on that one small part of the promise that they make us, that we give up the right to decide everything for ourselves, where they basically exchange. In exchange for your right to decide things of your life, you get the right to make a cross on a piece of paper every 5 years or so. The one part of that promise is that this government will, in some patriarchal, strange fashion, then also take care of you. And yet, it cannot. And to think about two clear examples, the one is the current power crisis. This is incredible. We are a nation that's in the grip of a national crisis. They cannot provide power for us. And don't think the government's going to resign. Don't think that any of those cabinet ministers will resign and take responsibility. And that, once again, is a fundamental problem with out of South Africa. People do not take responsibility. Because there's always the government. There's always history. There's always the past, apartheid, my mother, my father. It's always the fault of somebody else. So if we get to a point where people start taking real responsibility for themselves, it will hopefully put an end to this kind of self-indulgence. It's an absolutely narcissistic system where it's very difficult to see anything except yourself. I think the easy keyword, I think it still points to racial tensions or the so-called easy answers. It's amazing how within those words you mention, money isn't one of them. Money, wealth. There's incredible wealth in South Africa. Incredible, incredible wealth. And the way that this wealth is distributed amongst the population. Now, there's an interesting thing to start speaking about. The fact that South African art basically continued to operate within an ivory tower. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have fine art, but I am saying that it's just incredibly funny how people can think you can make any real social change from within that ivory tower. The role of art has been relegated to that of some kind of community consciousness, the preachers of politics, etc. And it's ridiculous, because that fundamentally takes away from the possibilities of art. If art is about freedom, then assigning that kind of role to it fundamentally detracts from it. And it's been the only feasible argument that can be put forward as to the so-called contemporary role of fine art, is that of some kind of consciousness, some kind of moral consciousness. And that's not particularly South African. It's just something that we are really struggling with now. Because as opposed to the kind of community-based doctrine embodied in a term such as Ubuntu, which is kind of largely adhered to in current government policy, or the question of the African Renaissance, you have artistic practice, so-called high artistic practice, which is incredibly individualist orientated. Now, the question is, how does this practice survive within a more community-orientated spirit? Especially one where the need for art seems so small, Well, the easy way is to give art some kind of social mission to ensure that it is politically active but not dangerous, to ensure that it fulfills some real quantifiable role within society. And the question of what that quantifiable role is less important than the fact that suddenly it's burdened with the responsibility of having to fulfill a quantifiable role. Once we can quantify something like that, we can shove it around the different departments that exist. Oh, you're not functioning within this institution or within this particular portfolio. Let's move you to agricultural portfolio. Oh, no, agricultural doesn't work. Let's move you to heritage. No, it doesn't work with heritage. Let's move you to social services. Whatever. But the moment that we strive instead for a kind of practice that is non-quantifiable, then maybe something will happen. Then maybe something will happen again in South African art practice that's really interesting. I don't believe in art, and I don't believe in the systems of art. I believe in people. That's different. People can change. That I believe in. I believe in their capacity to think for themselves, to decide things for themselves. And in as much as I can on a daily level, I will allow other people that right. I will say the following. I've been on a fair amount of shows. I've been fortunate to be in some good shows internationally and so on. And it amazes me how a lot of these so-called political artists or artists who strive for better political futures cannot treat their assistants with common human decency. That amazes me. These so-called fantastic political artists who treat other people terribly. Now let me tell you where politics starts. It starts with that moment that you treat somebody else decently. That you treat them like you would like them to treat you. If you can start there, I tell you what, if people started doing that all over the world, we'd have a changed society tomorrow. Whether art can do that, I'm not sure. Well, you know, being a white South African in Europe, it means you're practically invisible. People can't really see you. Because I associate Africa with skin color, a dark skin color. It fascinates me that. But I think on some level they also associate white South Africans with fairly right-wing thinking, which has led to some interesting conversations in Europe before, where people think that because I have a white skin, I'm part of Europe, and therefore they can let me in on their little right-wing thoughts about this or that problem with Africa, or God knows, with Islam or whatever. I'm a stranger in the house here. And yet, I do not look like one. Basic stereotypes such as, oh, so there's wildlife, or maybe there's lions walking around Johannesburg. Sure, they exist, but for the most part, they're good use in comedies. Or, you know, I mean, it's a fairly human thing to do that. Stereotypes aren't just disempowering. They, in some way, they make it easier for us to compartmentalize thoughts and ideas. This can become a disempowering process. The fact of the matter is, it's impossible to know everything, and therefore people kind of employ stereotypes to make them feel like things are under control, or that they have some grip on a reality that is forever slipping away anyway. Stereotypes about South African, the easiest is, I thought you were black. That I've had before. People fly you out for some exhibition and then say, oh, we thought you were black. I've had that before. The other thing is that if you are a white South African and people know something about South Africa's history, they assume that you're slightly right-wing. Or that you're stuck with white guilt. Neither of which I have. If I could erase one sound, the cell phone, the ringing of a cell phone. I think if we could just get rid of that, that'd be fantastic. A sound that I really enjoy, silence. I think that's the best, when it's really, really quiet.
Radio Papesse è un progetto di Ilaria Gadens, Carola Haupt e Cristiano Maggi.